Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to A Basic Conversation. Father Basic, welcome, and it's good to be across from you as always.
It's always enjoyable, Brad, and I count on you to lead this conversation in a constructive direction.
All right, I'm ready.
Good.
And the topic is a weighty one, a meaty one, an important one, and it's Pope Leo's approach, understanding of women in the church.
Yeah, Pope Leo and women in the church. Yeah. Short summary. Yeah.
Should we start out with a caveat right out of the way?
Go ahead.
That there's two males, you and I, speaking about women in the church. And so there's going to be some blind spots.
For sure. My sister Pat warned me about it ahead of time.
It seems like we should have had either your sister Pat or someone,
yeah,
or a female Catholic theologian here.
You know, I've often repeated that line that celibate priests need sisters. Sisters who will tell you the truth and say that was a lousy homily and don't say stupid things like my sister said, Pat. So anyway, Leo doesn't have any sisters. That seems important to begin with. He's got brothers. But so the first part I want to talk about, Brad, is how he sees women's role in the church to be increased and to become more involved and to be part of the church more fully. So in that sense, he's a follower of Pope Francis. Pope Francis was convinced that we had to do better in women's roles in the church, in governance, and important positions in the Vatican. And so one of the things that Pope Francis did was appoint three women to the dicastery in Rome that vets possible bishop types. I mean, that's really big. So Francis did that, and then Bishop Prevost, now Leo XIV, was very involved in that. He was on that same, in Rome, there's what we call the Roman Curia. And the Roman Curia is the bureaucracy of the church in a sense. And they had 17 dicasteries. I'm not sure we need to remember that word, but there's 17 different dicasteries or commissions or offices that take care of various parts of the church business. So Pope Francis, with now Pope Leo's help, appointed three women to the dicastery in charge of vetting possible bishops. That's a really important position.
Had that ever happened before?
No. That's the first time many women have been officially appointed to that, to any of the dicasteries, really. So Francis made important steps forward. And he was right alongside of current Pope Leo, helping him. And Pope Leo himself was on that dicastery for vetting possible bishops. That's such an important thing. And so he worked with three women on that. And it's interesting how they did well together. Each one talking about their experience lauds the other for being respectful and competent and so on. So one of the things Leo said that, now current Leo, said that these women appointments were not just showcase. They were important, valuable theologians and experts in their own right. It had nothing to do with, like, you know, satisfying women constituency or something. They were not showcase, and he lauds them for doing a good job on their homework, of bringing theological insight, of having good ideas and so on. So he appreciates them as women who, in their own right, do good. I know one of the women he worked with, I thought was a really provocative statement, said that the current Pope Leo does not have to learn how to deal with women. He knows how to deal with women. He's dealt with women throughout the time in Peru and so on. He has a fundamental respect for women. He's good at talking with them and dealing with them. And she said that he doesn't have to learn that. I remember when Pope Francis was in the same position, I remember talking to one of my women theologian friends, said that what Francis needs is a good female friend. Leo doesn't need a good female friend. He doesn't need a sister. He's just comfortable in his own skin. He's just at ease with himself. One of them said that if he listens really well, and if he disagrees, he does it politely and with respect. So these are great qualities that he has. He's a thoughtful person. I think people watch him on TV. I mean, he's not off the cuff. If he's talking, he's reading a script. It's well thought out and well reasoned and so on. Which brings up another thing that women are hopeful for, that Pope Leo will not say weird things. That's a word some of them use. Don't say anything weird about women.
Dismissive, disrespectful.
Yeah. So that goes back to Francis was not good at that. Pope Francis often said things that offended women as much as they liked them. I mean, I remember one woman theologian telling me that he's so good at so many things, I'm going to give him a pass on the dumb things he says about women. I'll give him a pass. So, for example, what Francis said, that women theologians are like strawberries on the top of a cake. I can tell you, women theologians did not like that.
Yeah, most women didn't like that. Yes. Not just theologians.
That's right. And another one he said, oh my, this is a bad one. He was talking about Europe. And he said that Europe is like an infertile grandmother who's no longer verdant, no longer vital, no longer energetic. He was telling that to the European Parliament, so it's really public. So I would say one thing that we can count on pretty clearly, Pope Leo's not going to do that. He's not going to make those kind of comments about women at all.
And women that have worked with Pope Leo have confirmed that he's very collaborative and inclusive, and there's hope there.
Yeah, a lot of the women have said that they have great hopes for him in general because of the way he's dealt with women in Peru, for example, where he really pushed them forward and gave them important positions and so on. And so he comes at this with carrying on the project of Pope Francis, but with a lot more savvy, a lot more measured response and more careful. But the women say that if he disagrees, he will say so. You know, and try to say why he disagrees. So he doesn't dismiss them. You know, he takes them seriously. So, and almost all of the women that have worked with him say they have hopes for him. They have, yeah, go ahead.
Can you give us some background of the history of women in the church? Because there's a lot there, right?
Yeah, there's a lot not there.
There's a lot not there.
I mean, this is all new stuff. I mean, there's never ever been women on any commission, Vatican commission, or any dicastery.
So I guess the question would be, why is that?
Yeah.
And that's the big
That's mockable. That's because there's been a patriarchal attitude in the church all the way along the line, which reflected society. So women didn't get to vote in the United States, so it was in 1913. Women couldn't vote, so it's just the way the world has been. And the church has not been able, up till now, to rise above that. It just reflected the way society viewed women as chattel. I mean, the charge has been that the church has seen women only in terms of their fertility, only in terms of being childbearing, only in terms of their domestic roles. And what women don't like is that approach has kept them out of the public forum. It's kept them from using their skills and abilities and experience in the public arena, and where people will listen to them. I think one of the things Leo said is, just because women are CEOs, run big corporations, doesn't mean that they should be bishops. I'll get to probably come back to that point at some point. So what are we trying? We're trying to see. So Leo, the first U.S. man who grew up in a patriarchal world himself, his mother was a librarian and a very talented woman. I think that might be part of what Leo has picked up. His mother was very bright and very assertive and very strong, and I think maybe that it had an influence on him. So that was the first part of how much out anything you. Oh yeah, you got anything else that any women said good things about?
It's just that the women that he assigned to some important roles. They talked about his synodality, which means as collaborative as listening.
Yeah.
And that's the hopeful aspect. But then there's the whole tradition of the church dealing with deacon and priest, right, that then bumps into that.
Right, right, for sure. Okay, if we've said enough about that, there's a part two to what I want to do. And that's the question of women's ordination. So I'll start out right, get it out on the table right away. Under Leo, women are not going to be ordained priests. I hate to break it to our audience, but it isn't going to happen, because Pope Leo fully accepts what Pope John Paul II said in apostolic letter in 1998, rehearsing the whole issue and so on, and definitively saying, women, the church has no authority. I think that's how he said it. The church has no authority to ordain women. So we're talking about women priests right now, okay?
And the main point for that is that Jesus named 12 apostles that were men.
Yep.
And he was all-knowing then. If he wanted women, he would have named women then.
Yep.
And so that kind of ends it.
Jesus' big part of the argument against women priests is that Jesus didn't have any women in the 12 who were the official witnesses to the death and resurrection of Jesus. And so that's part of the argument. So Pope Leo buys what Pope John Paul II said in 1998, that women just cannot, the church has no right, no ability to ordain women to the priesthood.
And there's nothing in the Bible that says, Jesus didn't say anything. Is there anything in Catholic doctrine that says that?
My teacher, Karl Rahner, I'll get back to him in a minute. First, let's take women priests. Now we got the arguments against it. Women can't be priests, John Paul II. Leo buys it. It isn't going to happen. So my women friends at Future Church and all the organizations pushing for women's ordination, I got more to say what Rahner has a message for you, but for now, Leo's not going to ordain women. Okay? The arguments, there's even a stronger argument against ordaining women than John Paul II, which is largely an historical argument. It wasn't done by Jesus, hasn't been done, and there's no reason to change that. There's a woman theologian from Toledo, by the way, Sarah Butler, lovely person. I've interacted with her in the past, very smart. And she says, the church has not ordained women, and there's no compelling reason why they should. Now, this gets pretty complicated, I suppose, but there's a theologian by the name of Hans Urs von Balthasar. He's a critic of Rahner. Balthasar and Rahner, Karl Rahner, my mentor, German Jesuit, great theologian, they work together on church matters, and then they had a break, and Balthasar, you know, criticized Rahner, went his own way, and he says it's metaphysically impossible for women to be ordained, so that he says you could get all the bishops in the world in a room and say the official words and so on, but they can't, they wouldn't be priests. And the argument is so weird, I hate to repeat it, but should I take, essentially it's a biological argument as I see it. In other words, he says, in the act of intercourse, the male is active and the female is passive. He does throw in a phrase, they're actively passive, whatever that might mean. So he says that the church is like, Jesus is the bridegroom of the, his bride, the church. And only men can do that job that Jesus did of being the bridegroom for the church. And so it's not possible. So
how long ago did that philosophy of Balthasar come out? When did he say that?
He said that, and he was an almost exact contemporary. Rahner was born in 1904, died in 1984. Balthasar and Rahner were contemporaries. Two great theologians walking the earth at the same time. The only time I can remember in history when that happened before was in the 13th century when Thomas Aquinas and St. Bonaventure were both teaching at the University of Paris. So I like, there were two theological giants walking the earth at one time. They interacted, worked together, and then split. On the women's ordination question, they are polar opposite. So some are saying Pope John Paul II says we can't because historical reasons. And Balthasar says it's because it just can't happen. It's not possible.
The Balthasar rationale is really hard to even...
I mean, I have trouble saying it, but it's just hard to take, for me to take it seriously.
To put a sexual connotation to that is very rough.
Yeah, I don't... Anyway, I tried to be as fair as I could to him. So now, let's stay with priesthood again. Karl Rahner, my teacher, German Jesuit, I'd spent time with Rahner. I took walks with him. I interacted with him. I did things for him. So he's in my bones and blood. So Rahner says that eventually women will be ordained because there's no reason theologically or historically to not be ordaining them. So he says the argument that they were never were witnesses, that, right, they were never run the 12, but Rahner says that was impossible. The 12 were witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus. And he says women in that culture could not be witnesses to anything. They were lower status. They couldn't witness anything, and therefore that argument falls. And so Rahner essentially says that eventually we will ordain. He likens it to slavery. For a long time, the church, you know, went along with slavery. There were bishops who owned slaves. There were popes who were part of a whole project of colonization that essentially put women down and held up slavery and so on.
Rahner said it's almost like a evolutionary enlightenment.
Yes, that's a good way to say it, yeah. So he says, as we reflect on Jesus, sooner or later we're going to see, well, slavery's wrong. We can't have slavery. And we came to see that. Why? Because Jesus was an egalitarian, because Jesus, and we say in Galatians, letter to Galatians, and in Christ there's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free, there's neither male or female. Passage in Galatians. And Rahner says, sooner or later freedom will prevail and we will ordain women just as we stop allowing slavery. So I offer that to people who are disheartened by the current situation. Pope Leo is really not open to that viewpoint, and that is not going to happen. Now we got a second question about deacons, which really gets sort of complicated, I guess. I think I can explain it. So Phyllis Zagano, she's connected with Hofstra University, and she spent her whole life studying the question of women deacons in the early church and the rites by which they were ordained. And she's convinced that women functioned as deacons in the early church. Paul calls Phoebe a deacon, and that that persisted for a while, and that the official ceremonies by which they were consecrated as deacons was just like it was for males. So Philip Zagano says the advice to Leo is that take the Amazon region. We had a famous Amazonian conference with that Pope was involved with. They wanted the Amazonian bishops. They got people to get to Mass once a year. Pope Francis comes there, and they tell him, we want to have ordained deacons. And so Phyllis says that what Pope Leo should do is, in places like the Amazonian area, Leo should say, well, there's no law, there's no doctrine that says women can't be ordained, and therefore I'm going to grant you permission to do that. Now, there's a big problem with Phyllis's argument. Given his opposition to ordaining women priests, he cannot, in good conscience or in logic, ordain women deacons, because the church has always said that in the ordained ministry, there's three grades, deacon, priest, bishop. Part of our doctrine, part of our teaching. So in a sense, he cannot ordain deacons like Phyllis wants him to, because he's against ordaining women priests, and that would vitiate that argument. So I hate to tell people again, but Leo is not going to ordain women deacons. And people are expecting that, like Phyllis says. Phyllis thinks that he probably will do that. Well, I hate to say it, Phyllis, but he can't logically do it. And he's a very logical man. He's very careful in his thinking. So he can't ordain deacons either. So are you with me so far?
I'm with you. I think a couple of the leaders that were on commissions to study the deacon, they were hopeful at first, but they feel it's just kind of buried in...
Yep.
The
various studies, there's been various studies of that, and supposedly the theologians got together and sort of convinced Pope Francis that there was no reason to move forward.
Right. If Pope Leo wanted to, could he, by fiat, to say, we're going to ordain women as deacons or priests? Could he do that? Or does it have to go through... I know there's all kinds of backlash, pros and cons.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to figure out the structure of the
church. I understand, yeah.
Who makes the final decision?
Yeah. Well, it is the Pope.
Okay. Makes sense.
But he really, in all logic and according to his own personality and character, he couldn't do that. He wouldn't do that. So, where are we? I got lost. So we were on women, no women priests, and Leo is not going to ordain women deacons.
And, but it's still kind of an sort of an open question.
Well, he has said that. See, there was a whole synod in 23 and 24 in the Vatican on synodality, which gets confusing, I suppose. But and they said we were going to have further study. And Phyllis Banks, Phyllis Zagano Banks, and that he is in favor of further study of the question. But
I can. How serious is it, right?
Yeah.
That's her point.
Yeah, it just, I don't see it happening.
Yeah. I think the, I can give you a personal, as a dad, so we have two daughters.
Yeah.
And I remember when they went through a religious formation, CCD, our oldest daughter came out with a visual structure of the church, and it had the actual picture of the Pope, and it had the bishop here in Toledo, and then it had all the priests. And they were all men. And I remember looking at that, and she was whatever, fourth or fifth grade. I'm just going, why would she want to be a part of the church?
I know.
And it's just.
I remember poignant conversations and I've had with some of my women students. One felt called to be a priest and a strong vocation, beautiful young woman, and just. And having conversations with her, and she left the church, became an Anglican, became an Anglican pastor, priest, and does fantastic work. I mean, I have strong emotional reminders of my conversations with her and saying, you know, I understand what's happening.
And I think the comment about because women are in leadership roles in the secular world,
yeah.
It can't be. I think that's missing the point. It's really women's ability to elevate the organization,
yeah.
Versus, I think that.
I mean, we got a lot of examples in the secular world, right, where women have done a good job as CEOs, or women in the legislature. Yeah, so it's a broader. Question, that's a good point that you bring out. There's a broader question of society as a whole. And, you know, we like to think of the church as being a force for moral good and so on. So I hang on to Rahner. Rahner's in my bones and blood. And I think, you know, whenever I face a problem, I think of him and what he would say and what he would do. I think a church and society would benefit, I have no doubt, would benefit from women priests and women deacons.
And you get into the, we've talked about the sex abuse crisis and the kind of legacy of that. An argument could be made that if there were women throughout the hierarchy and leadership, most likely that wouldn't happen. Someone, the maternal instinct, would prevent it.
I'll say it in broader terms, that the clerical culture, allowed that to happen. I mean, priests, in terms of in the seminary, which is still the case, seminarians who are going to be ordained priests are in an environment where there's no women. And when I was there, there were no women. There were no women teachers. There were no women spiritual directors and so on. Now, that does exist to some case now. But we still have a strong clerical culture. There's a woman in Britain who argues strongly along your lines that if women had been more involved in the life of the seminarians, it was far less likely that we would have seen as much abuse as we did. Not total, but... I guess that would take us maybe in a whole other topic.
But so, it does hit on this idea of women ordination. It's a broader subject, right, about how to involve women in a substantive way. Because I think there's a lot of hope with Pope Leo because of his embrace, and he understands the value. But what I've seen some of the Catholic theologian females saying that, no matter how inclusive it is, if it, they'll always run into the hierarchical aspect
right.
of ordination.
Yeah.
And that they will still be operating within an ordination structure, a patriarchal structure.
Yeah. All true. I want to end on a positive
Let's
note.
Let's do it, please. Yes.
Pope Leo's comfortable in his own skin. Pope Leo doesn't have to learn how to deal with women. He treats them with dignity and worth, values their opinion, is willing to take them on, argue with them, and make his own point. And that makes me give hope that Leo will be, in the long run, good for the church and good for women in the church and good for women in society. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father Basie.